The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Off we go into a new week. Good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We will have John Wilner, our weekly Monday chat chop-up with Wilner, Wilner Hotline, all things around Pac-12 football, basketball, as we get started with the football season in less than 2 weeks. Thank God. John Wilner will be with us. And then Fabs. We're going to start chopping up fantasy football every week with Fabs, although he's telling me that he's having rotator cuff surgery tomorrow. So we're going to have to crush him first. I need to know how this happened. Week one takeaways from fantasy football. I've had people that sent in questions, what's going on with tight ends, the Steelers, so on and so forth. Jimmy G with the Deshaun Watson thing and Cleveland and other landing spots, draft strategies. If you guys are drafting now, you're hosed because you're going to have injuries or you're going to have movement. And you may be looking at a quarterback of the New York Jets who just gets dinged up, Zach Wilson, and you're dodging a bullet today. So we will have Fabs with us. So Wilner and Fabs, a good Monday. The chairman of the board steering this ship, the good SS Titanic. No, it's not the Titanic. It's Jared Nielsen. Jared Nielsen, chairman of the board, the Iron Man. All right, what's on my mind in the world of sports brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. Little promotion, first and foremost. Claudia is hosting the Football AZ show this week on Bally Sports. Claudia Collins. I have seen segments of the show. It's really good. There's actually a segment in there where I'm interviewing Claudia about her role in recruiting Roundup. So I kind of reversed it. It's like, you're hosting, I'll give you a segment. I was going to do something on the Cardinals preseason. I watched the Cardinals preseason. I'm not doing anything on the Cardinals preseason game. This is, it's not going to mean anything here in about 2 weeks. So I just looked at this segment that we did with Claudia on how her journey came to be. Claudia was making, she's open about it. Claudia was making $11 an hour in Amarillo, Texas, doing media with her masters. It's crazy. The podcast with Claudia and I is up on the site from a few weeks back. We chopped it up. And she's been open about it. And I remember when she and I talked and she just sounded like she was this close to saying, what am I doing here? They've got a help wanted sign out the drive-through here in Amarillo for $12.50, $13 an hour. And I'm at 11 doing media? Come on. So got her back. And so how did she grab hold of all the recruiting stuff? You know, parents like to, they just like to tell you how great their kid is. And many times the kid is not. Kid's good, but, you know, little Tommy, who's 5'6" and 170 pounds and has a 2.1 GPA, is not going to Power 5 conference. It's not a slight. Go to Division III, go to NAIA, go all over the place. So how does Claudia process it when she has those parents that just want the best for their kids but have no clue what they're doing? And there's a lot of you. Claudia will get into that as well as some other things. Claudia Collins. All right, the weekend. So, I mean, the most interesting thing to me this weekend certainly wasn't preseason NFL football. It really wasn't. I mean, the Tatis suspension was interesting on so many levels because I've never seen, here's a player that's got $300 million that he's signed up for. San Diego's gone all in on him. He's getting just crushed. Manny Machado, yeah, we're just fine without him. Clevenger, we're just fine without him. And so I'm watching this dynamic because usually in sports, especially in baseball, the idea of calling out a teammate publicly just doesn't happen. It doesn't. It's like the code, the unwritten rules and all that. And here the Padres are just crushing him. And A.J. Preller, their GM, all over him. But the one voice that wasn't was Bob Melvin. I know Bob. I would consider Bob a friend. If Bob Melvin had not gotten in the middle of a really bad triangle here with Josh Burns and Derek Hall, Bob Melvin should still be here managing. And I think the Diamondbacks would have more wins in the postseason and postseason appearances if they just those three had figured it out, but they didn't. And Bo Mel went on to do great things in Oakland and is doing good things in San Diego in his first season. Here's the thing, though. At some point in this offseason, The Padres will be asked about, do we keep Fernando Tatis? Have the bridges been burned? And a team like the Diamondbacks, every team in baseball should at least at minimum start conversation now of, what are you going to do? And you're like, well, I'm never going to have a steroid guy on my team. Fine. That's fine. But if you're in the business of building up a very good team, and you have a very good player who just can't seem to figure it out, sometimes a change of scenery is what that kid needs or doesn't need. Sometimes you just run away. If all you're going to do is build a team of choir boys, I think you're going to have a nice team. They're going to win some games. Don't think they're ever just going to go out and win big, which is what I'm about. Win championships. Don't just have a bunch of nice guys hanging around. I don't want characters off the field that are showing up in the police blotter. You understand me on this. Like the Diamondbacks team that won in 2001, if it was Todd Stottlemyre who was having some arm trouble showing up with the red ass, that's good. Okay? If it's Matt Williams who's quiet over in the corner but speaks only very seldom, if it's Mark Grace being a goof, if it's Randy Johnson, guys just trying to get the personality to come up at him. If it's red light, Curt Schilling, there was a role for everybody on that team. But it wasn't like they were all kumbaya. You know, it wasn't. And so I feel like in a case of Tatis, today, wouldn't want him on my team. 6 months from now, do you explore it? Do you look at it? Do you say, well, maybe. So it's the most interesting thing. Just haven't seen ball players crush teammates like I've seen that story. I watched a lot of the Diamondbacks over the weekend. I like what they're doing. I know they're not going to go anywhere this year, but they've already matched their win total from a season ago when they bottomed out. There's still, I think, 50 games left, 50 or 49 games left, and they're at 52 wins. I said they'd be around 75, probably a little off. You know, if they get to 70 wins, an 18-game improvement, you know, like I'd take that all day long. If they're at 49 and they go, let's just say they go, I don't know, 24 and 25. So 24 more wins puts them at 76 victories. Pretty close to 500, right? Like, wouldn't you take that after the slot that we had last year? So it will be interesting what ownership decides to do with Torey Lovello, because it's become an annual topic. And I look at some of the kids they brought up. Tommy Henry pitched yesterday. He was great. He was really good. Being up there in Colorado, 3 runs, 5 hits, 5 1/3 innings pitch. I will take that in Colorado all day and all night. So they're in San Francisco for 4 games. Cardinals have preseason game number 2 this Sunday against Baltimore. The Suns are going to be on Christmas Day against the Denver Nuggets. That is a sign of respect that the Suns are playing a Christmas Day game, that they have some sizzle, they have some swag, and so you'll have that there for you. The Mercury are kind of an interesting story to me. When you go through everything that the Mercury have been through, we have the worldwide story of Brittany Griner, and she happens to be a teammate of the Phoenix Mercury, and she hasn't been here all year because she's in prison in Russia. Diana Taurasi pulled up lame. She's done for the year. Skylar Diggins checked out last week. So here the Mercury are. They actually made the playoffs again. 10th consecutive year that they've made the postseason. They open up with Vegas on Wednesday. The Mercury are winless against them this year at 0-3. I think Arizona State today will name Emory Jones, if they haven't done it already, their starting quarterback. Like, this has been a no contest from my understanding of the people that have been out there standing on sideline at practice. The ASU-NAU game comes up in, 17 days. Arizona at San Diego State, that opener is in just under 3 weeks now. And it's become a big game. We talked to Wilner about this. It's become a big game because San Diego State wants to be in the Pac-12, right? So here they are against a Pac-12 team and a team that they were able to boat race last year. So that game is of interest. And we're going to go around the horn, I think, with John on some of these other games. Like, can Utah take out Florida? So you have the Utah-Florida game, and you have the Oregon-Georgia game on opening weekend. There's some other games in the conference and games you really don't want to see, you know, your team lose. I had them written down. Like, If Oregon State falls to Boise, Colorado at home is going to get run over by TCU. But like if UCLA struggles with Bowling Green, it's the thing with this conference. You can't have these bad looks. Colgate, Stanford, can't have these bad looks. I think ASU is going to struggle, and I wouldn't be surprised they lost to NAU. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they lost to NAU, given all the turnover, coaches, players, everything. To think that that's going to be a clean game from start to finish, that would be a major accomplishment if that's a clean game. And right now, I feel like NAU is going to beat ASU. So we'll talk with John Wilner about that. In fact, we'll get to that next. And then Fabs on a busy Monday. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, as promised, on Mondays, John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. You can read all of his content on the website at sports360az.com. And, of course, follow John on Twitter at Wilner Hotline, his podcast with John Canzano. It is ramping up a couple of weeks into it, and you've just got a lot going on. I see the celebration behind you. So,
yeah.
Is this for us being together that you decorated? What is the story behind you, John?
It's a celebration of the college football season start. No, actually, it is the remnants of my daughter's birthday party, so which I didn't realize was still up.
No, that's fine.
It could be for anything. It could be the celebrate football, ASU naming a starting quarterback, you know, Pac-12 surviving another day, whatever we want.
Yeah, keep that up, you know, as we go through the season. You mentioned ASU. Today, Herm Edwards meets with the media. It would be a stunner if Emory Jones is not named the starter today, and I mean a stunner of epic proportion. They play with NAU here in a couple of weeks. What are you hearing around the conference, just big picture this week, that has caught your eye, caught your ear?
Well, the biggest thing is the existential crisis, right? And I think this week the Big Ten is going to announce it has finalized its TV contracts for the next cycle, and that will tell us specifically – which TV network has what, right? I don't think they're going to announce the dollar figures, although those very well could leak to the media by interested parties. But we're going to know, all right, how many games does Fox have? How many games does CBS and NBC have? What broadcast windows? And I think that will tell us something about what's available for the Pac-12. Because right now, it's pretty clear that ESPN is going to be interested in Pac-12 content. Which is very good for the conference, mm-hmm. but there needs to be some competition to drive up the price, because ESPN's not going to pay 1 cent more than it absolutely has to. And if there's no other TV network bidding, then ESPN's going to be able to set the price, and that's not good for the conference.
Okay, so if it is ESPN, does it involve ABC, the parent company? Because if it involves will. ABC, yeah.
Yeah, I would think, but I don't know exactly when, right? Because ABC is going to have SEC games on during the day. So we could see Pac-12 occasionally on, you know, prime time. We'll see. Maybe there'll be some kind of late night window on ABC. If folks remember, last year, Fox over-the-air network broadcast a Stanford-USC game that started at 7:30 Pacific. And it was the first time mm-hmm. that an over-the-air network had started a college game in prime time on the West Coast. Usually those games are on cable. So we'll see. Maybe ABC will do something like that.
Because if it is the case, John, I've looked at the ESPN ABC thing just in the last week thinking, okay, this actually could be very good for the Pac-12. You're going to be on the same networks, plural, as the premier conference in college football. And to your point on the late night window, but let's just say it is the 12:30 window. And let's just say that Alabama and Kentucky play in the 9 a.m. window. And the 12:30 happens to be a Pac-12 game, but the primetime game, of course, is going to be SEC. My point is, if you're in these windows during the day a couple of times and you're over on big ESPN, not ESPN2 or ESPNU or any of those other third tier networks, it's pretty darn good to be in this real estate.
Oh, it is. And, you know, you get the cross promotion, right? Because they're showing right. Alabama, Kentucky, and they're also talking about, hey, you know, Oregon, Washington's coming up, right? So absolutely. If there's one network you want to be on, if you're the Pac-12, it is ESPN, right? Because it still drives the conversation, the playoff conversation, the Heisman, all of it is driven primarily by ESPN. But you also need to have a price point that works, right? And you're more likely to get the price point that's going to satisfy the 10 remaining schools if there's one other, at least one other network bidding for your rights, and whether that's NBC, CBS, Fox, Amazon, Apple, Turner, we don't know, but the Pac-12 needs one of them to show real interest.
John Wilner with us, Wilner Hotline. Follow his content over on Twitter at Wilner Hotline, his podcast with John Canzano. That is up and running. And of course, he joins us every week and you read his content on the site. It's a big week for UCLA, right? Wednesday is the day where the UC Regents are going to get together. Walk fans through what that is all about. What does that mean for this UCLA trying to get to the Big Ten?
Well, so UCLA and the University of California, Office of the President, have come up with a report on UCLA's move to the Big Ten. Why it's good for UCLA, why it's not bad for Cal, which will be an interest. It'll be very interesting to see what they say about that. That is going to be presented to the UC Regents on Wednesday. I believe the report is basically done. There is a meeting at UCLA, coincidentally, on Wednesday, and there's an open session and a closed session. We don't know if there'll be a vote. We don't know if they're going to attempt to take legal action. We don't know if they're going to attempt to penalize UCLA financially and force the Bruins to subsidize Cal for revenue lost. Could go any number of ways. But Wednesday, we're going to get our first look at just how difficult politically and financially this move could be for the Bruins. The Regents have the power of the purse. So they could, you know, I don't think they can legally block the move, but they could hit UCLA, you know, in the wallet and make it very messy for the Bruins. And then we'll see how they, the school responds.
All right. On the field, we're 2 weeks away now. Can't wait. And, well, you know, let me just throw a few schools at you. And they, we talked a couple of weeks ago about Oregon at Georgia, and it'll be Dan Lanning's debut. Figures to be Bo Nix, right? Things aren't changing up there at quarterback.
Figures to be Bo Nix. And, you know, Bo Nix played 3 years at Auburn. So he's got experience against SEC defenses. He's got experience being a road team in SEC environment, which is what Oregon's going to be, right? The game's in Atlanta. So it's going to be 90% Georgia fans.
Right.
So at least you're going, if you're Oregon, at least you're going in with a head coach who knows Georgia's personnel because he was just their defensive coordinator, and with a starting quarterback who knows the environment.
Billy Napier's had some injuries at Florida, quarterback. One of those quarterbacks is Jack Miller, who was here in the Valley and transferred from Ohio State. Utah's at Florida. A lot of Tavian Thomas, John, do you think, on the ground to try to establish it? Or we talked last week about, you know, you have Heisman Trophy candidate at quarterback or dark horse at quarterback. Utah, Florida, what do you make out of it early on?
Look, I think that is the most important game for the Pac-12 this season for a couple reasons. Utah has, in my mind, the best chance of making a run at the playoff. If they're going to make a run at the playoff, they got to win that game. It's on, you know, a tough environment, obviously, SEC stage. But Utah is favored, and Utah has got more coming back than Florida and has a great chance to win. I don't think Oregon's got a great chance to beat Georgia, right? But Utah has got a great chance to do basically what Oregon did last year against Ohio State. Win a huge early game, get yourself in position for the playoff, right? No two-loss team has ever made the playoff. So if Utah's going to do it, they either need to beat Florida, and then they can afford a loss in conference play, or if they lose to Florida, they got to run the table in the Pac-12. No team has run the table in the Pac-12 since it was the Pac-10. Oregon did it in 2010. Nobody's done it since. So it's a huge game for the conference.
Quick thumbnail, bounce around. Arizona's over at San Diego State. The Aztecs won 12 games last season. The Aztecs are opening their new stadium, Snapdragon Field. I'll be there for that one. U of A, I think, is turning the corner and to me is one of the more intriguing storylines in this conference this year. Quick thought on U of A at San Diego State.
Well, it's big for Arizona that they got a quarterback they can take in there, right? Jaden Delora, who played very well last year for Washington State. I'll be curious to see, you know, San Diego State kind of beat them badly last year in Tucson, right? 35-14, something like that. So Arizona is certainly not going to be lacking for motivation. It's a good chance for Jed Fish's second year to start off on a high note. And, you know, it's also from San Diego State standpoint, it's a little bit of an audition, right? I mean, if the Pac-12 decides to expand, San Diego State's going to be at the top of the list. And, you know, would look good for them to come out in their brand new home, beat a Pac-12 team.
Really interesting to see it from that perspective. Okay, there's a couple other games, because in week one, what this conference cannot have is games like Boise State whacking Oregon State, or TCU destroying Colorado, even though I think that's going to happen, or Bowling Green challenging UCLA. These are just some of the games in week one a couple of weeks from now, John. And for the conference to say, you know what, we are pretty good, we're heading in the right direction. Any of those games you look at and say, Brad, this is not going to be a good day for that school in the conference.
Well, I think Colorado's got a tough game. There's no doubt about that, right? They had a bad season last year, and I'm not sure that they have their roster's any better than it was. But generally speaking, think back to what happened last year, the first couple of weeks, all those losses to BYU, all those losses to Mountain West schools, Arizona losing to NAU, Washington losing to Montana. The Pac-12 cannot, it needs Utah or Oregon to win one of those high-profile games, but then it cannot afford to have just a disaster against the Mountain West and the Group of Five. It's got to show that it's got a strong middle, right? And so I'll be watching to see if there's any bad losses. Got to avoid bad losses.
Yeah, I mean, I think NAU can challenge and beat Arizona State in Sun Devil Stadium. They went to Tucson last year and did it. Don't care about the COVID layout or any of that stuff. It's just, that's how disarray it is here to have the starting quarterback not show up on campus until May 5th at ASU. In timing, who the receivers are, I think NAU is going to challenge ASU in that one.
Could be. I mean, I'm just very curious to see ASU's general state of mind, to see what the execution is like, how much have they made of this offseason, all the new coaches, all the new players. ASU is way up there in terms of intrigue. And of course, the off the field issue, there's 2 weeks. Is the NCAA going to do something in the next 2 weeks so it gets that notice of allegations to the school before the season starts? We don't know, but it is fascinating to watch.
All right, before I get you out of here, Mark Stoops, John Calipari. You've been following this story at Kentucky, and I think of U of A because basketball school, that's what it is. Kentucky's coming back around for the fans that haven't seen it. John Calipari made a comment about we are a basketball school. Mark Stoops is like, yeah, no, that's not how it works here. Do you see this around the conference where you hear this sort of chatter, John?
No, you don't. And I mean, I haven't heard two coaches from the same school going at each other publicly in a long time. Right. Yeah. But it's interesting. Kentucky is a basketball school. It is really hard to be good at both.
Right.
I mean, think about the basketball schools, Arizona, Kansas, Kentucky, Indiana, Duke. Syracuse, Duke,
North Carolina.
None of them are good in football consistently. It is really hard to be good at both. And look at the reverse, right? Ohio State, Alabama, Oklahoma, Georgia, you know, they're not standout basketball schools either. It's very difficult to be good at both. And it is incredibly rare for coaches at one of those schools to be going at each other. And the fact is that Kentucky basketball has slumped a little bit lately. Mm-hmm. So Calipari doesn't necessarily have quite the same platform to fire shots that he would have. And Mark Stoops is doing a really nice job there.
Yeah, and Mark Stoops is getting a new football facility, and Calipari is wanting improvements to basketball. So I think Calipari is very, very much on the point of, I'm going to just stir some stuff up.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make people know that I'm over here and don't forget about us. I need my facility. That's
me and my $10 million a year salary. I need my facility. Yeah, right. There's no doubt about that. I mean, and the fact that Stoops said, you know, this program wasn't born on third base was, boy, that was a shot across the bow.
No question. Good stuff, John. Stay safe this week. Thanks.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
There's John Wilner. Again, find all of his content, Wilner Hotline. We carry it on the website at sports360az.com. He does his weekly podcast with John Canzano. Follow John over on Twitter at Wilner Hotline. We're back with more after this timeout. As promised, the Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano, dropping in, Sports Illustrated senior fantasy analyst over at SiriusXM Fantasy Dirt. Big breaking news. He is going on the injured list. You are going to be out of commission. If you want to get into it, all I'll say is he's got a damaged wing. How's that?
Yeah. Bike accident. I've been hearing a lot of bike accidents lately. I've had a couple of friends who've had bike accidents. Chris Sale from the Red Sox had a bike accident. I mean, like, these bikes are dangerous. And yeah, unfortunately, hit a slick spot on one of my rides. This was probably, I mean, geez, like 8 weeks ago. Tore my rotator cuff. And tomorrow, Tuesday, is the earliest they could get me in. Great timing with football season 3 weeks away.
Right.
But it is what it is. So, yeah, the next time you you see me, I will be in a sling and potentially full of some sort of pain-killing drug. So
that might make an entertaining segment. But
I could. I know. I could. Well, either that or it could get me in a lot of trouble because I'll, you know, have no idea what I'm talking about.
Well, what will happen is I'll ask you all sorts of questions about the Commanders and the Eagles and the Giants. And I'll tell you, like, hey, man, when we were doing these segments, you were just crushing the Cowboys. And you're like, what? Really?
Yeah, I don't think I'd ever be that. Fan. I don't ever. Funny story real quickly. Yeah. This is not my first rodeo with surgery.
Okay.
I've had some knee surgeries. I've had some other surgeries. And one of my knee surgeries, I'll never forget it. When you're out in recovery and you finally start to wake up, you're kind of groggy, right? I mean, you don't know what the heck's going on, really.
Yeah.
The first thing I asked when I woke up was, what's the score of the Yankees-Orioles game?
Oh, my gosh.
The Yankees were playing the Orioles that day. It was like a day game. And the first thing I asked, how did it go? How was the surgery? Nope. What's the score of the Yankees-Orioles game? I'll never forget that. And like the fact that I even remember it, because I was still kind of like out of it.
Yeah.
The nurses thought it was funny because like I wanted to know the score. So.
Well, and the way the Yankees have been playing the last couple of weeks.
Oh, my God.
Probably.
We stink.
Yeah.
We went from being dominant, beating everybody. And it's not even – we can't score any runs. The games are all close, but the games that we're losing now are the games we were winning in the first half of the season. I mean, we're still way up in the East, but geez Louise, they better get their act together here quick. Or if the Yankees don't go to the World Series this year, Yankee fans are going to be out for blood.
Yeah.
Because it looked like a foregone conclusion. Now, not so much.
So when Michael talks in the we form, that's his team.
I have been in a relationship for, geez Louise, what am I, 49 now? Whew, 41 years with the Cowboys and the Yankees and all my teams. It's longer than I'll ever be in a relationship with any woman. It's longer than I'll be in any relationship with just about anybody who's not family. So, damn it, it's a we.
That is good. That's good. Fabs is with us, Michael Fabiano. You can find him over on SiriusXM Fantasy Dirt. Of course, Sports Illustrated Senior Fantasy Analyst. He is the Hall of Famer. All right, what was your big takeaways first week of preseason football?
We started to see the hype machine build on some rookies. Zamir White, Isaiah Pacheco there in Kansas City, Romeo Dubs in Green Bay. So we now don't get crazy, folks. Okay. Like it's, you know, 1 week of the preseason, just put him on your radar. Pacheco, maybe he's going to end up being the number two back in Kansas City. Maybe he's the four. We don't know. Right. Green Bay's got a whole lot of wide receivers there beyond Alan Lazard and Randall Cobb and Christian Watson just came off the PUP. So maybe Dubs is not going to be a thing. We don't know, but you have to put these guys on your radar now. Zamir White, same kind of thing. Looks like maybe he's going to be the two in Las Vegas, although a committee is potential, at least is very possible there under Josh McDaniels. But you know, just names that we maybe didn't hear about a whole lot before preseason. Those are a few of the names that are popping. George Pickens looked really good for the Steelers. Yep. But again, folks, keep in mind, it's a preseason. Put them on your radar. Throw a flyer on them late. Don't get crazy, at least not yet.
All right, so that's a good segue here because I had someone from the mailbag said I need to get Fabs on Pickens and Johnson behind Chase Claypool and if Trubisky's a quarterback, is even worth it. So deep dive on the Steelers.
Right. This offense is going to look different. Right. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger threw the ball, 600 times last year? I mean, he's not going to throw – Tomlin's not going to have Trubisky throwing the ball that much. Pickett looked good too. So who knows if Trubisky's even the guy long term, at least this season. We know in the future this is Kenny Pickett's team. But Trubisky is a guy who, you know, he was a QB 15 1 year in Chicago, and he can run a little bit with it. this is probably the best talent he's ever had around him in the pros where he was a starter, because last year he was a backup. But ultimately, he's still a QB3. He's not going to get picked in traditional leagues. If you're in a 2QB or super flex league, he'll get selected late. But not a guy that I'm expecting to put up top 15 numbers at the position. And with the offense changing, I think they're going to want to run the ball a lot with Najee Harris. I don't love Deontay Johnson as much. Big Ben had tunnel vision for him. I mean, you knew every week DJ was getting 7-8 targets because Ben just loved throwing to him. I mean, we don't know if that's going to be the case with Mitch Trubisky yet. And Pickens is a guy who's got high ceiling long term. Chase Claypool he's been a little bit banged up. And honestly, when you look at Claypool's value compared to what it was during his rookie year, where it seemed like, wow, this guy's a star in the making, it started to slip. And he's still going to get picked ahead of Pickens, but the gap is closing between those two wide receivers. DJ, to me, is a probably mid-wide receiver two, whereas with Roethlisberger the last few years, he's been in that low wide receiver one conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at running back here, and that's it. If Najee's gone, I'm not touching anybody with the Steelers.
Well, I mean, Freiermuth could be a good option, right, for Trubisky, and you probably get him as a low one or a high two, but you have to devalue the wide receivers. And I know Big Ben's arm was like a noodle last year, right? I mean, it wasn't like this is, you know, Big Ben in his prime, but you can't account for the experience and the targets, right? Those guys benefited from with Roethlisberger under center. And again, Big Ben threw it over 600 times last year. That's not going to happen with Trubisky.
I'm getting a lot of questions about Pitts and the Falcons and just tight ends in general this year. You know, the tight end group, it's intriguing, Michael. There's a lot of depth at that spot, I think, this year.
There's a lot of possibilities, for sure. Problem is, there's a cliff at that spot. So you know who the top guys are, right? It's going to be Kelsey. It's going to be Andrews. Pitts is going to probably be, I have him ranked three. It's going to be Waller and Kittle. Dalton Schultz. How about them Cowboys? Love him. No Amari Cooper. No Michael Gallup. James Washington's out. He's going to get a lot of targets. TJ Hockenson is in the mix there. Then you got Dallas Goedert, Zach Ertz. And then you're like, okay, well, now you're kind of throwing darts, right? I like Freiermuth, but there's no guarantee he's going to be as good without Big Ben. Mm-hmm. You would think he'd take a step forward in his second year, but the quarterback situation, of course, is different. Noah Fant, like the Seahawks are going to use two tight ends a lot, but is Will Disley the starter or is it Fant? You have to question that. And then you've got a whole bunch of guys like, you know, Hunter Henry could be good, but touchdown regression. You've got David Njoku in Cleveland, Albert Okwuegbunam in Denver, Irv Smith in Minnesota. So there are some guys that could potentially break into that top 12 this year. But overall, once you get past Ertz, and even Ertz, when Hopkins comes back from the 6-game ban, his target share could go down because remember, they didn't have Hollywood there last year. They do have him there this year. Mm-hmm. So I feel like once you hit Ertz, then it's like, well, maybe I'll wait a couple more rounds. I've waited this long to get my tight end one. And you throw a couple of darts. Maybe you get a Fant and a Freiermuth, or you get an Herb Smith Jr. and Hunter Henry, and then you play the matchups between the two. It's going to be a tough position to fill. Now, as you mentioned, like, there could be some guys who break out or become sleepers that make the position a little bit deeper, but there's no guarantee of that at this point.
Well, and I look at Mark Andrews' situation with Hollywood gone. Like,
oh,
Lamar's got to be looking at him even more. Like, of the tight ends, and I have had Kelsey the last couple of years and Kittle. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to say no to either one, but I'm looking at Mark Andrews and thinking, you know, this may be a better play this year than in years past.
Early. Yeah, last year he went crazy.
Right.
So I think he was over 1,300 yards. He had over 100 catches. He had a second half that was, I don't know if he can duplicate that. But you're right in that aspect. Lamar's going to throw to him a lot. I wouldn't be surprised if he finished ahead of Kelsey for the second straight year. But, boy, duplicating those catch and yardage totals from last year could be tough for Mark Andrews. Still one of the top two tight ends in fantasy football, likely to be off the board at the latest mid-third round.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I may reach on him. This is my thought. Michael Fabiano with us for a couple of minutes. Sirius XM Fantasy Dirt, and of course, all of his content over on SportsIllustratedSI.com, the Hall of Famer. All right. Every week we have to go down this rabbit hole. This is the Jimmy Garoppolo is sitting there. Deshaun Watson is waiting. Is he going to go to Cleveland? What's the strategy this week for Jimmy G and Deshaun Watson?
Still waiting, right? I mean, the Jets lost Zach Wilson for we don't know exactly how long, maybe 2 to 4 weeks. But if it's a month, they're not going to trade for Garoppolo, right? They're going to go with Mike White or Flacco until Zach Wilson can come back. And we don't know what's going on with Watson. Yeah, hopefully we know soon. I mean, this kind of stinks, right?
And are you seeing him taken, Michael, or people taking him in the drafts that you're in?
Just I was in a 14-team league with a bunch of experts over the weekend in Canton, Ohio. And if I remember correctly, he either got drafted really late or not at all.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in a 10-team league, he's not getting picked. If you're in a 12-team league, he's not getting picked. Now we're talking about traditional one quarterback leagues. If you're in a super flex league or a 2QB league, somebody's going to take a shot on him, and they're probably going to handcuff him with Brissett. And again, the whole Watson thing, it's uncomfortable to talk about from a fantasy perspective. Yeah. Because, you know, fantasy is just so meaningless when it comes to what this whole situation is and has become. So at this point, I mean, I'm trying to avoid him.
Okay, and Garoppolo. Let's move over then to Garoppolo.
If Cleveland loses Watson for a year, I wouldn't be surprised if they traded for Garoppolo. Now, they got to do something with the contract. Garoppolo's making a lot of money. I don't think the Niners are going to cut him, but maybe they do, right? I mean, that's within the realm of possibility. He's not doing anything right now in Niners camp. So if I'm in a 2QB super flex league, I'm taking a late flyer on Garoppolo, expecting him to potentially go someplace else. And, you know, injuries happen, right? We already saw, you know, Zach Wilson go down. Luckily for the Jets, it's not long-term, at least doesn't look like it. But these things happen, and so there could be an opportunity for Garoppolo out there. I mean, you know, what happens if, you know, Davis Mills gets hurt, right? I mean, you know, we obviously don't want injuries to happen, but they do. Houston may be a team that looks for a potential trade for Garoppolo. But right now, I think Cleveland, if Deshaun Watson is suspended for the year, might be the most likely landing spot for Jimmy G, because it doesn't look like Seattle is interested in him. And why would the Niners trade him in division? They seem to be set with Geno Smith and Drew Lock. I mean, good luck with that. But Garoppolo is a player that in a traditional league will not get picked, but in a 2QB super flex, you grab him with a late flyer, maybe as your QB4. I could see people doing that.
All right, before I get you out of here, let's go back on something you brought up early, and that was, I saw it on your social, you're in Canton, Ohio with a bunch of fantasy football experts doing a draft. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool on a lot of levels.
Yeah.
So a couple questions here. What was that experience like? Who are the people that were in the room that the fantasy fans would know? And who are some of the players you're like, wow, that's really interesting. I hadn't considered this view on this player. Or were you guys all pretty well the same way down the board?
Listen, everyone is going to like Travis Etienne this year for the most part, right? There are players that a lot of the analysts in the industry are going to agree on. You know, Trey Lance is going to be a very popular sleeper breakout in San Francisco. And we're all looking at the same data, right, Brad? I mean, you know, there's no difference. It's the same for me. It's the same for Bob Harris. It's the same for Jeff Ratcliffe. It's the same for everybody. This is like the third year that they've done this, third or fourth year, I think. Maybe it's been going on a little bit longer than that. But I have only gone the last 2 years, and it's always fun to meet up with people in the industry because you never really get to see them all that much. And I have a lot of friends in the industry, you know, like I mentioned, like Bob and Jeff and certainly some others. I think the most fun for me is like just interacting with fans, yeah. Right? To me, I'm just Fabs. I'm, you know, talking fantasy football, talking football, bitching about the Cowboys, complaining about the Yankees. You know, I'm just me, just having fun. But, like, you know, people want to come up and take my picture. I'm like, all right. You know, like, I mean, that it's always fun to do that and talk to the fans and interact with them. And, you know, it's always nice to hear you help me win a league or, you know, I'm into fantasy football because of you. Like, that stuff is always the best part of it for me, because I don't really get a chance to interact with, you know, with the fans very often, especially, you know, now with, you know, we're still, I guess, in the whole COVID situation. I work from home, so I don't leave this office very often. And so that's always fun there. It was cool to draft. Like we drafted from like the press box area, at the Hall of Fame at the field. So that was cool. We had done it in the actual hall in previous years. I didn't do any of the tours. I've done those so many times, but I probably blew like, you know, $250 on merchandise for friends at the store. But it's fun. You know, Bob Lung is the guy who put it together, and he, you know, does an exemplary job, really great job. And there's booths and stuff on the Sunday. I had to leave. I had to come back to LA a little bit earlier, obviously, because I have a lot going on and the surgery on Tuesday. But it's a whole lot of fun, and it's great. I mean, there's like 700 or 800 people that go to this thing.
That's cool.
So it's a pretty big deal. And again, my favorite part of it is interacting with just people who want to, you know, take a picture, chat about fantasy, you know, tell me I'm an idiot, jokingly sometimes. But most of the time, it's very positive and a great experience for me. It's probably just as much fun for me to meet them as I guess it is for them to meet me. Although, again, I'm just Fabs, man. I'm just trying to help you win your fantasy league. So
that is it. Fabs also is on Cameo, by the way.
After I get done with you, I got to do like 3 or 4 of them.
Yeah.
Because like tomorrow, like you don't want a Cameo for me when I'm, you know, jacked up on Oxy, like, you know, because I'm going to get this, all this like pain medication. LA, it's Fabs here. I'm on Cameo. What year are we in right now? My shoulder hurts. Listen, Joe Namath is not a really good fantasy quarterback. He was a good real life quarterback. And, you know, like, I'm just going to go off and take it. So I'm trying to get him in now. So, yeah, but I am on there. And if you hit me up this week, I should get to it by Friday. I'm hoping by Friday I'm feeling somewhat better. I mean, I know your wife had this procedure, and she was good enough to talk to me about it. But I might be whacked out for about a week. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
All right. Be safe. Be brilliant. Thanks for the time as always.
My pleasure as always, pal.
There's Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer, Fabs, and we're back with more after this timeout.